We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to In the Know. We are recording our first episode in a while, post-hurricane, post a lot of things. It's in the doldrums of the NBA season, so there's not been much going on basketball-wise, but you guys did submit a lot of questions to us, and we want to tackle them. But Mason, it's been a minute. What is up?
You go first because you've been the one living during a major hurricane down in New Orleans. So I want to hear from you. How are you doing? How's everything? How's your family?
Yeah. Oh, man. We're good. We're definitely pretty fortunate compared to a lot of people outside of Orleans Parish. A lot of people, I mean, even within Orleans Parish, like we got roof damage. Some water came in into the attic. So we're going to need to replace a good portion of the roof and probably the insulation inside of the attic, maybe some other stuff. Well, we have an adjuster coming to take a look and give us an idea of everything pretty soon. But other than that, you know, like we're safe, things are fine. I rode out the storm. You know, it was one of those things where I was kind of keeping an eye on it throughout the week. And then like the rapid intensification occurred and I was like, oh, this is kind of crazy, but it was pointed slightly eastward. And I was like, all right, cool. I want to sit through this because at that point I didn't feel like driving anywhere. It was like Saturday morning. And I had like reached out to a couple friends of mine who were also planning on staying. And we all kind of hunkered down together. And that kind of like spurred our decision. Like, okay, like we'll just stay together. We'll be fine. And the storm itself on Sunday was unlike any storm I've been a part of. I mean, I've ridden out a few hurricanes at this point. And this one was different because it ended up sitting and the winds just lasted for hours and hours and hours. And it was absolutely surreal to just, cause we were like right out on the lakefront. And so like, stupidly made some trips out to the lake to go see like what was going on.
Those videos were wild, man. I was like, I hope it didn't get swept up.
The first video I posted was like the storm hadn't even made landfall yet. And it was just like, okay, this is happening. And I didn't go out there while like it had made landfall. I went out there like the day after again. But yeah, I mean, because there was like branches flying around, there was things flying around. I didn't want to get hit by something. But Yeah, like, so for those of you who haven't experienced a hurricane, the stuff they say about it with like it raining sideways and all, that's absolutely true. But like, it's like a wind wall. And I don't even know how to describe it other than just like, it's like perpetual sideways rain for like hours. And like, normally, I think in weaker hurricanes, you'll have gusts and like little like intermittent, you know, I guess dull points in the wind. This just felt constant for hours. And yeah, I mean, there was a lot less lightning and thunder on our side than I expected, but the wind was just absolutely crazy. But then the next day, you know, we came out, assessed the damage. There was like several trees that were down around like where we hunkered down. You know, my friend's van had a tree fall on it, which is not good. And went over, I checked out my parents' house, got to clean out their fridges and whatnot, because they were out of town. They were visiting family and they weren't supposed to be in town anyway. So they didn't plan for any kind of evacuation. And so, yeah, there was a lot to clean. So I had to empty out all their stuff and then get some tarps on the roof and all of that. But we ended up leaving the city that afternoon, and I basically spent like a week and a half on the beach, and that was great. That was a good way to get away from it all, but it was a pretty stressful weekend before that.
Yeah, I can imagine, like, it was a even for me, there was a period where I was stressing out a little bit. It was weird because like the day of the hurricane, it was totally fine getting in touch with, you know, my family. And that was on that Sunday. And then on Monday, I wake up and like nothing's going through to home. And like, I knew like, yeah, like my parents, I knew that our house, my family's house would be okay. I was just more worried about like other family members, like my grandma who lives in Reserve, which is right by, you know, essentially right next to La Place. And everyone heard about what happened there. And so I was kind of freaking out a little bit because I couldn't get to touch my mom. And so I didn't know like through extension, like how my grandma was. And like, long story short, everything ended up being okay. You know, all my family is safe and damage is relatively minimal, thank goodness. But like, I was stressed out enough on Monday, like I couldn't focus on anything. I can only imagine what actually being there in person is like. So just glad everything's okay.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons we didn't leave was because, like, between, like, me and my friends, like, we had two dogs and, like, three cats to kind of, like, take care of. And we're like, yeah, if we could not travel with all of those animals, that would be great. And so, you know, we ended up leaving anyway the day after. But what was weird to me was when it was going on, we made it till, at least like where we were, we made it till like 6:30 p.m. before the power went out. And before that, we're like, guys, are we getting lucky? Like, we were watching the outage map. I was watching Twitter, and, you know, people were like, oh, there goes our power, there goes our power. And we were like, okay, this has lasted for a really long time. Like, I expected us to lose power by like noon, and it's like 6:30 p.m. And we're like, are we gonna get out of this and still have power? Like, is this what's gonna go on? And then, you know, power went. And what's funny is that Cox internet was still going even though the power was out. So we still had internet because we had some backup power for a little bit. And the internet then like went out like about an hour and a half after that, which was, you know, like Cox normally, if you're from around here, you sneeze at that, you know, you'll lose internet, you know, like it gets cloudy outside, you'll lose internet. So I was surprised Cox made it longer than the power. But then, you know, after that went down, I was like no longer getting cell signal. I wasn't getting anything. And it was just like, okay, yep. We're in the middle of a hurricane. And this is the blackout. You know, there's no communication in or out. Like, I was trying to send texts and they were taking like 30 minutes to go out. You know, like, I think I sent a tweet, like I had sent it in my time, like at 7, and it published like at 10 or something like that. I don't know. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I was getting like the same text 3 or 4 times and getting it hours later than it was sent. So yeah, I can, that makes sense.
Yeah. I was texting Mason. I was like, yo, like what's the status of the hurricane? Cause like, I couldn't check anything. I'm like, is this thing moving? Is this thing like, what's going on? And then we found out like, oh yeah, like a transmission tower went down and the transmission lines went down. I'm like, oh, okay. That's not good. And then like at that point, there was a lot of poor reporting around the subject of the transmission tower. And like, there weren't any like good estimates as to how long power restoration would take. And it's not like it took a very, it's not like they were able to turn this around pretty quickly. I think they've done an okay job, but it's like, you know, we didn't get power until Tuesday night, you know, or was it Wednesday? Well, no, Tuesday night. Yeah, we didn't get power until Tuesday night, this past Tuesday. So that's still like well over a week without power. And but it's better than, you know, the worst case scenarios that they were projecting, like 6 weeks or whatever the hell. Like that shit was terrifying.
Yeah, for sure. I saw that, and it was really scary. I mean, if that's the power, that's the estimate for power being out, then that means basically you're telling people you don't come back until power is back. And like that's really a difficult proposition for a whole lot of people. And so it's good that things have been coming back more quickly than expected.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with how like people and community have mobilized to help others. And you know, as well as those organizations, you just would hope that government entities would do a better job, and some of the entities that are responsible for, you know, like how Entergy just completely had a lot of their facilities in disrepair and didn't do basic upkeep or maintenance and all that kind of shit. Like you would feel that these entities would take a little bit more responsibility, but ultimately what's going to happen is we're just going to end up getting charged more on our power bill next year.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, like if you guys are listening and are curious for ways to help, you know, please feel free to reach out to Mason and I. We can direct you to some good organizations and good resources that could really use it. So just hit us up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably easier to do that, especially because there's a bunch of good, like just easy links to follow to seek out those places. And so definitely, you know, want to stress that message that there are certain places like Schmidt's saying, outside of the greater New Orleans area that are struggling real, real bad right now and still need help. So anything any of y'all can do is absolutely appreciated.
Yeah. A good friend of mine was in Laplace, and he got like 5 feet of water, and his roof was blown off. And like, yeah, that house is completely destroyed. It's a bad time for a lot of folks over there. And then that's not, you know, like that's not even including like some of the lower parishes that were closer to that eye wall that where the storm stagnated, just were completely battered. Yeah. So that was the update with the hurricane, and there hasn't been much going on with regards to the Pelicans during all of this, which is good. The Pelicans, apparently, you know, Andrew Lopez just tweeted they're working in collaboration with some of the players on their team to do something bigger. Gail Benson announced her $1 million fund initially. I think it was like the relief fund that they started. It was pretty quickly that they announced that. Some of, you know, Trey Murphy III is partnered with Raising Cane's to help out in HOMA. And, you know, some guys, Drew Holiday, Jahlil Okafor, Frank Jackson, Langston Galloway, all those guys have also helped out. So it's been a pretty good response from the NBA family around the Pelicans. So that's been good to see. But as far as the Pelicans and the media goes, well, you know, it just seems like every outlet's taking its turn to write about how poorly the Pelicans operated and on their offseason, and how ill-fitting they are, and how they're just not going to be a good team. So that's been fun.
And how Garrett Temple's the first wing off the bench of the Pelicans, apparently.
Well, only behind Josh Hart, who is a starter, which is something I saw today. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's been a lot, but I don't really have the energy to fight these people online right now, so I'm not going to.
That's why they're going at it right now. They know people are exhausted from other things, and so they can just kind of hammer in on them. But not a lot of stuff that I guess that, you know, the big problem I had with it was reading stuff that just seems like you haven't watched the team. It's like I understand, and frankly, if you had you had told us that like a few months ago that the offseason will play out like it did, I think it's fair to say both of us would have been disappointed with that outcome. And that's fine. But I think there are limits and as to how much doomsday we want to put over this offseason and where we want to really focus in on, because I think that the team is, if you're saying the team is worse than it was last year, then I don't think you're paying close enough attention. Doesn't mean they had a good offseason, but I think it matters how you structure your case. And I think a lot of people nationally maybe haven't done the best job.
Yeah, I'm just curious when you break down, if you really sit down and look at the team and you break it down to like different components, and I'm like, what areas do you think the team got worse at? So I don't think they got worse at rebounding. Steven Adams is a good rebounder, is a good team rebounder. Valanciunas is on another level. I mean, he's a beast, right? So I think that's, you could say, well, losing Lonzo hurts in rebounding. Maybe, depends on who they put in the starting lineup. If Trey Murphy's in the starting lineup, I don't think you're going to lose much in terms of rebounding. I think they're going to be an elite offensive and defensive rebounding team, just like they were last year. I think they were top one overall and then like one and three respectively in the different, the different categories. I don't think they got worse as a shooting team. I think they got better. I think they got better offensively, period. Just addition by subtraction, like Adams and Bledsoe are no longer on the team. You're adding a pretty high volume shooter in Devontae Graham. Theoretically, this guy named Trey Murphy can shoot. And Santoransky is a good offensive player. I mean, I think the bench got deeper. I think the biggest qualms people are going to have is like, oh, they got worse defensively. And I think on paper, sure. I think anyone who watched the team for any significant period of time would be like, yeah, okay, we didn't lose any needle movers when it comes to defense. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, did they even have needle movers to lose in the first place? Is a fair question.
On paper, they had an all defensive guy.
Yeah, touche. Yeah. So I mean, I think it's really easy as a surface level. Like if you want to condemn the Pelicans for things that they've done, you can say, oh, they lost a guy who's just 1 year removed from being second team all or whatever team all defense.
First.
And then Lonzo Ball, who's like and Lonzo Ball, who's a theoretical good, really good defensive player who really in reality is fine. He's not bad by any stretch, but he's, like you said, he's not a needle mover, or at least he wasn't for New Orleans. So I think it's fair to say that their defensive talent certainly declined, but I don't know if the overall defensive performance of this roster is going to dip that much.
Yeah, I think there's different ways to look at this. I do think my preferred way to look at this is to look at a team who was really close on a lot of areas last year. So they lost, I think, was it 11 double digit leads? I think most of them were in the fourth quarter. They were the worst team in clutch. I think those areas are small margins. And I think the challenges the Pelicans face in those areas, particularly on offense, have improved greatly. So if you believe that the team was close last year and if you think that the team is better fitting than it was last year, doesn't mean it's good fitting, it's well fitting, but better than it was last year. I just don't see how you can think it's a worse team, but there are generally people who think that this is not a well fitting team. So that's fine too, I guess.
Yeah. And I think also important to stress is minute allocations. And so the roster last year versus roster this year isn't enough. You've got to also think about minutes. And I think that certain players who are strong defensive players are going to see a little bit more action than they did last year. Like, I think it's very fair to say that Naji will play, minutes per game will be, more consistent throughout the season. Whereas obviously he was a late bloomer for the Pelicans last year. That helps your defense. And other players, I mean, I think there are certainly players who we think in theory are going to be good defenders, but we haven't seen them play enough to really be confident one way or the other. And so, I think you'll see players who are going to give more effort at minimum and probably get more minutes because of their defensive abilities than they got last year, potentially.
Here's what I take issue, man. I see all these stupid tweets about from people who I think are smart, by the way. All these tweets are like, man, I think Minnesota's a real sleeper. I think the Kings are a real sleeper. I'm like, seriously? Seriously?
Did we lose Zion Williamson or something? Did I miss
that? Who have the Kings added? Who have the Kings added that you're like, oh man, they're gonna turn this shit around? Who has Minnesota added to where you feel like, oh, they're gonna turn this shit around? Okay, like you think they weren't healthy last year. That's fine. When Karl Anthony Towns was healthy, they lost 15 in a row. Come on, yeah. Man. Like, why are those teams getting any of the benefit of the doubt? Like, oh, I think they could really make some noise in the West. Okay. Yeah, I'm asleep, man. I'm asleep on those teams.
It's like it's basically comparison to expectations. It's like if you expected the Pelicans to not do much and they didn't do much, they can be a sleeper team. But because the Pelicans had higher expectations, because they struck out on Kyle Lowry and let Lonzo walk, like all these things that are different for like what they could have done versus what they did, it's easy to use to anchor yourself on some of that and just say, oh, they're disappointing. And whereas, like, I think with some of the other teams, like the Kings and Timberwolves, oh, well, you know, they weren't even trying to do that much, so it's okay. And so now they can be a sleeper team. It's really weird backwards logic. And I'm inferring here. No one's said this, obviously, but that's kind of how it seems to me.
The Kings were, like, the worst defensive team in the league last year, and they've added precisely who? They've added Davion Mitchell, who's going to be a rookie, and he's a 6'1 point guard, so – yeah, maybe they'll get a little bit better on that front. But, I mean, their interior defense still relies on a 6'8 Rashawn Holmes. Maybe he's not 6'8. Maybe I'm exaggerating here. But he's not exactly huge. And he's fine. You know, people have tried to, like, paint him as, like, an all-NBA-level defender. I don't see that. The Wolves, they traded Ricky Rubio for Taurean Prince. Okay. All right. Woohoo. That's going to that's really gonna make them intriguing, I guess. I don't know, man. I feel like people just wanna talk shit about the Pelicans.
I've got also so one other so taking a step up above those teams, it seems like I've seen a lot, and maybe I'm arguing around the fringes here because the projections have mostly been pretty close between two teams, but I am very highly doubtful that the Memphis Grizzlies are still a better team than the New Orleans Pelicans next season. And I feel like I've seen almost universally that people are projecting the Grizzlies to be a better team than the Pelicans, despite the trade they just had with each other. Like, I don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas projects that too. I who is a shooter on that team? Name me one shooter on that team.
They traded one of those guys, one of the few guys they did have, right. Grayson Allen, right? Yeah.
So who's left?
John Morant's a volume shooter,
but he doesn't shoot well from three. I mean, your best hope is Jaren Jackson Jr. regaining right. form, and him becoming your best 3-point shooter. That's possible, but. And I mean, Kyle Anderson hit a decent percentage last year. I don't know. I feel like people want to complain about the Pelican spacing, and they're in for a real treat watching the Grizzlies next year.
Not like Lakers-esque or not quite.
I mean, the Lakers at least have a lot of talent going for them. I don't know. I saw someone. What was it? There was the whatever the Grizzlies equivalent of the Bird Rights is said that they put out an article that basically said that Adams isn't going to be a downgrade from Jonas.
Okay. I mean, they want to and look. I mean, I think Seth Partnow made a similar point just about their relative roles in the team and how they'll fit in. But the point was not that. I don't think his point and the Grizzlies, some of the Grizzlies people I've seen talk about it aren't saying that Adams is going to, you know, win the Grizzlies as many games or more than Valanciunas did. But I think they're more talking about how he's a better fit because he's going to force the offense to come from different places that help with their development. That does not make them a better team. Like, it just doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, Adams forced the offense to come from Zion and Ingram. We saw how that worked in crunch time.
Yeah, exactly. And hey, you know, any, you know, whatever you know, not that the roster construction was by any means good last year, but hey, at very least it forced the offense to flow through Zion a bit more, and you learn things. And so even out of bad seasons, you can pick up things about your roster that will help you make better decisions moving forward. So at least there's a silver lining there.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think the West is going to be as strong as it has been in years. I think there's more wins that can be had in the West than any time in recent history, mainly because the teams that are even locks to be playoff teams, like the Nuggets and the Clippers, they're not going to win as many games as they would have if they've been completely healthy, right? So like these teams that may have been like 53, 54, 55 win teams might be 48 wins teams, right? And if you have enough teams that were supposed to be that good, but are like seven or eight wins less good, then that's, if you have three teams like that, then you have potentially 21 to 24 wins in the West available that weren't there before. And they're going to go to somebody, right? And I think that's the case with pretty much everyone. I'd say even including the Lakers, right? The Utah Jazz, if they stay healthy, are probably a team that can win high 50s, maybe 60, just because they're a well-oiled regular season machine. But everyone else, you know, I feel like it's not going to be a one of those seasons where you need to win like 48, 49 just to make the eighth seed.
Yeah, I think case in point is I think the one team I look at that really helps to tell that story to me is Golden State. I think I've seen Golden State projected as high as second in the Western Conference this year, despite the fact that Klay Thompson's not going to be back to start the season. And there's optimism about him returning sooner rather than later, but you're still talking about a guy who hasn't played in 2 years. And so I think Golden State's going to be a good team this year. And I have confidence in Klay Thompson still being like a pretty good player. But the fact that despite all that uncertainty, you can still put them so high in the West speaks to the relative, like you said, the relative health and strength of the rest of the teams in the conference.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Here's my question for you is, if a Ben Simmons trade happens, how does that change your outlook? So let's say the three most likely West teams to get Ben Simmons are Golden State, San Antonio, and Minnesota. How do you evaluate those teams?
How does it change all three of those in the playoff picture?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that does a lot for Golden State, just because, again, assuming Clay's back and he's the guy that he, or close to the guy he was. I mean, I think that seems like a nice fit, although you can't play him with Draymond, which is kind of the concern. So I guess the upside is questionable, because I don't see how you can have a functional team with him and Draymond on the floor at the same time offensively, even with Steph and Clay. But maybe you disagree with that.
I don't know. I mean, I'll have to look, but I feel like they played, like over the years, like I think last year they played Ben Simmons and Dwight Howard minutes together at some point. You know what I mean? And I think they've done weird stuff like that. So I think Draymond is better than Dwight Howard offensively.
that's fair. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that does a lot for their for regular season wins. I don't know what the playoff ceiling is. I don't know how much it moves the needle on their playoff ceiling. Just because, again, I think as you get deeper in the playoffs, I'm not sure how that works. But I think regular season wise, it certainly does. As for the Spurs, I don't know. I feel like whatever trade they would make with San Antonio for Ben Simmons, I think they're probably not gaining that many wins. I think they're still, they're probably giving up a couple of players who help from their backcourt. The one that's really tough for me to pinpoint is Minnesota. I think I could see a whole wide range of outcomes there. What's your feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I think if Minnesota pulled off a trade, they would probably be, they would have to trade all of their future picks, and at least, I don't know how they do it without trading Anthony Edwards, right? And so, if they're not trading Anthony Edwards, then
I don't see how they do that,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess Morey would really have to like D'Angelo Russell and then all of the picks, and then get Jaden McDaniels as well, and get a bunch of swaps. That would have to be the trade. And if that's the case, you know, I still don't see how they're a significantly better team than the Pelicans if they have Ben Simmons.
So a team with Towns, Ben Simmons, because like that's a pretty ideal front court for Ben Simmons is him and Towns at the four and the five. I think that's
it's
pretty nice. And then from there, I guess the question is, you know, what else do you have enough around those two guys?
Interesting how they match salary, right? So if Anthony Edwards is in the trade, then they have to include probably Kareem Prince as soon as he's able to get aggregated, probably Malik Beasley as well. And so who are your guards at that point? I don't know. You know, so D'Angelo Russell and Ben Simmons, I guess, would be your guards. And I don't know how – I don't know, man. It's such a weird team. And
is Beverly on that team right now? What's this? Where is he?
Is he on the team? He might be on the team.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why people like Minnesota a lot, because of Pat Beverly.
Yeah, because he's been moved around so much, I feel like, this offseason. But yeah, I think he's there.
Oh my god. But you know, when I look at that team, I think Zion's better than Towns by a hair. Actually might be by a lot real soon. And I think Ingram is better than Simmons. And so I just don't see that supporting cast better than the Pelican supporting cast.
Like you said, it's so dependent on what the trade is and who's going where, or who's going back to Philly. But I generally agree with that assessment, but I think that depending on how the trade's structured, I could see Minnesota being better than New Orleans.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Fun stuff. All that, I feel like we kind of buried the lead on the Ben Simmons stuff, which is all that. I guess, I don't know if that's, did that Ben Simmons or Maxi not doing Philly PR stuff or appearances get debunked, or is that something that
no one's debunked it? Well, I mean, so can we, I guess that's the conversation we can have next, is agent tactics, because Ethan Sherwood Strauss wrote about CAA and ESPN and the Knicks and all of that, and then obviously Clutch is up to Clutch shenanigans with Ben Simmons, and the most recent thing that they've talked about is how it's not Ben Simmons's job to fix his trade value. So they've now said that they will not report to camp if not traded.
And the contract structure is super interesting too. I didn't realize that. You see that comment from Windhorst on the fact that he gets half of his money for the season up front. So the first half of the season he can sit and still get, you know, not to worry about a damn thing.
That's really funny. I did not see that.
Yeah.
Good for Clutch.
Yeah. I mean, that really expertly done. And so that threat is not just a threat. That's very real.
That's really fun. So yeah, it's interesting. And then at the same time, Clutch is being sued by Nerlens Noel.
Yep.
And that's interesting because Nerlens is alleging that several teams try to offer him deals that Rich Paul never brought to him, which I think is definitely true. Because I know of a certain Norris Cole story, and I think you know this Norris Cole story as well. Mm-hmm. And how the Pelicans, after they try to retain his restricted free agent, the Pelicans offered him a deal Rich Paul was like, nah.
A bad deal, by the way. Like, yeah, way overpaying deal. Him. Way overpaying him. And it was the contract length that they pushed back on, right?
Yeah. So, like, it was the same summer that, you know, like, they paid Oshik, they paid Jinsa, they paid Dante Cunningham. They were giving everyone money. And it came to be Norris Cole's turn. And they were like, yeah, you can have 3 years. I think it was $21 million, $7 million a year. Yeah.
Just a total joke of an offer. Like, he even play in the league that year after that?
No, he played – well, after that year, no. I think I don't think he got another deal ever. But, yeah, so Rich Paul was like, no, don't accept that deal. And Del Demps was like, oh, yeah, fuck you. And then he pulls the offer entirely, and Norris Cole has to sign the qualifying offer. And yeah, I mean, I feel like there have been – I think there have been a few players that have been fucked over by Rich Paul and his tactics.
I compare that, and this is like the limited fantasy football I do now. We for fantasy basketball too. We do auction drafts instead of like the snake draft type structure. And it's like where I would bid for a player and like be very, very scared about putting that money down. I was like, shoot, I almost hope somebody outbids me. And I feel like that's kind of like, well, it wasn't outbidding. It was just kind of clutch bidding against nobody. And I feel like maybe that's what Debs felt like when he put that offer on the table. It was like, oh, shit. I feel like this is something I have to do, but I really don't want to, even though he didn't have to at all. And then once Clutch did, Debs probably like huge weight on his shoulder. I was like, all right, not a chance. I'm doing that. Goodbye.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know what Dell was thinking, offering him the initial deal. Period, but it was just one of those things. I guess they were riding on the high of
the playoff berth, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever it was. Terrible offseason. Terrible offseason, that one.
So bad.
Gentry was also hired that offseason, by the way. So I guess sort of moving on, did you have any thoughts about the whole CAA situation and how it relates to ESPN and the Knicks and whatnot?
I mean, I think it's good that some of this stuff is coming to light. I think there's obviously like, there's going to be bias even in that type of reporting from that article. I mean, there's clear bias involved. But I think it needs to be out there. It's very clearly something that like, I got Knicks fans are really mad at me, for commenting on that stuff. Saying that, you know, there, I think some people replied to me even thinking I wrote that article, the one that Ethan wrote. And even though I put the screenshot and the link to the damn article, but doesn't matter. People don't pay attention. But just like, oh, well, the ESPN's hated the Knicks for years. It's like, no, ESPN. Yeah. They hated the Knicks because they're not going to try to prop up a dumpster fire product. I mean, if anything, they can talk badly about a product when it's bad and that generates content itself. It's like the second there's an ounce of hope, the second you can spin something positively, I feel like you see that with the Knicks. And so there's a difference. They're not going to like, they're not naive enough to try to like sell a trash product as trash. But the second that trash product becomes like remotely passable, suddenly it's the greatest thing ever. And oh, what are the possibilities? Look what could happen from here. And so like the fact that they were not like that ESPN like dumped on the Knicks when they suck doesn't mean anything, because that's what they should be doing. And so it's really about when that the second things turn to not be garbage, to be just like below average, they'll sell a below average product that's the greatest thing ever. And that I think that's a reasonable call out to make.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think people are going to be surprised to know that there's a lot of this stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And obviously, it's not just CAA, right? And it's not just Clutch. It's been kind of this power struggle and maneuvering for years. I mean, look, the Knicks sent their entire front office to watch Zion in New Orleans. I mean, this shit's already fucking started. And the Clippers were shameless about it when Kawhi was a Raptor. Right? All this stuff about Giannis. I mean, teams just do this shit, and they're going to continue to do this shit as long as they're able to do it and there's not any meaningful consequences for it. And there's also not going to be any meaningful change as long as there's not any consequences from the agent side. So now there are two teams, the Bulls and the Pelicans, who are under investigation for tampering just because Rich Paul couldn't keep an announcement in his pants.
And I forgot it's still ongoing. We haven't gotten
it's still ongoing. It's been over a fucking month, and there's nothing that has come out of it yet, all because Rich Paul wanted to announce to the fucking world at six on the dot that this happened. And as long as agents are allowed to operate this way, in both in that way, as well as like forcing, you know, players off of teams and then making them cancel community events and yada, 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 as well as influencing media, as long as there's not any tangible like punishments for that, all these agency users are going to try to take advantage to it to the max. Every single one. Otherwise, if you don't do it, then you're the sucker. You're the one that's losing out on opportunities to change outcomes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just wondering what comes next. It's like beyond any sort of decisions on tampering violations. I mean, what happens like next time the CBA comes up between this and the players trying to force trades with 3 years left on their contracts? Like, I am very curious how this pans out in future negotiations.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think if one or two stars demand out early, in between now and the next CBA, there's definitely going to be a lot of fight from the ownership perspective. But I just don't think Adam Silver has the backbone to do anything about this. I think David Stern would have. I don't think Adam Silver has the backbone to do it.
Yeah, it's possible. And I think, you know, I think the Zion stuff is going to be another key focal point. Hopefully it's nothing. Hopefully it's just takes the rookie max, designated max extension, call it a day. But I mean, whatever happens there, I think both sides will be looking, monitoring that situation closely.
Yeah, guess we'll see. Gonna depend on this fucking season and this ill-fitting roster, supposedly. I mean, there's a lot riding on this. And to be honest, there is, right? So I think if the Pelicans don't, if they're not successful, I don't know what success means to them. I really don't know what the measure of success is to Zion. I don't know what it is to the team internally. I don't know. But whatever that measure is, if they don't reach it, and it could mean something different for ownership entirely, I do think more heads will roll. And I wouldn't be surprised if Griff was amongst that count if the team was disappointing. Yeah. So it is a pivotal offseason for a lot of folks. What's interesting to me is that none of the moves that the Pelicans made this season have screamed, I'm about to lose my job, right? Obviously, they swung big and missed for Kyle Lowry and Chris Paul, but they didn't bounce back from that and be like, hey, we're going to spend two picks for Larry Nance Jr. Or like, you know, we're going to do – they probably
take Buddy Hield. Yeah, take Buddy Hield for free or like without taking – yeah, right.
Yeah, they've opted for flexibility. They've opted for staying lean. And that's interesting to me is because the actions don't scream – I'm desperate.
Right.
So I don't know if that's just internal optimism. I don't know if that's just, hey, there's really, really nothing to be worried about. There isn't any kind of mandate, or I don't know. I don't know what that means, but it's interesting.
Yeah. And I think some folks might be quick to comment on the Memphis trade, right? The put it in the Memphis trade. Talking about, you know, well, the Pelicans traded a pick to dump salary. And I think if you're looking at that narrow-minded, you're missing the bigger picture. Forget the addition by subtraction stuff of dumping Bledsoe's dead weight. If you say that, you're underselling the value of the upgrade from Steven Adams to Valanciunas. Like, forget whether or not they extend him. I mean, even for next season, I just think that the improvement there and what it can do to help this team win games in season is meaningful. And doing that and getting off money, even if you're not using that space this year or not even this year, using that space during this offseason. So like, that's not as big of a deal to me. To do it, what'd you do? You traded the Lakers pick that probably isn't going to be good, but even if it somehow is, you protected it. So I just don't see, I mean, if you want to complain about the other asset they lost, like it's not a very high value asset. Teams aren't stupid. They're not going to, you know, take a protected Lakers 2022 pick in any deal of consequence. So I just really don't see that as a desperation move. At best, you can say, well, they maybe they should have planned better for that, you know, for that extra space before they made the trade. But I think maybe the Pelicans do it either way. I mean, just because it was, I think it was good just overall asset management. As long as you don't kind of conflate this deal with the original Steven Adams deal, then I think in a vacuum, this trade made a lot of sense.
Yeah. All right, look, there, you don't need to scrutinize this deal much further than the surface level to see this stuff. And people just aren't doing that. I don't know. Maybe this all turns out to blow up in the Pelicans' faces and we look like idiots once again 6 months from now. Because, you know, there's this creative ways things will happen. I just, well, my preemptive rebuttal already is that if that happens, it's not because of the reasons people are citing now. It's going to be for totally unrelated reasons, as it was during the finishing five era of Drew, Eric Gordon, Tyreek, Ryan Anderson, and AD. The process didn't mean shit when none of those guys were ever healthy on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah. Agree.
Anywho's, I think that we can wrap up this little Pelican segment here and go on and move towards a question and answer pod.